Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for January 12, 2015, USDA Report Day. This is Dave Dickey. Four major reports were released today: the Crop Production Annual Report, the January WASDE, the Quarterly Grain Stocks Report, and the Winter Wheat Seedings Report. We'll have wall-to-wall coverage with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and the folks from the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason will look at U.S. ethanol production in the wake of changing prices of gasoline and crude oil. And the folks from Earth Risk Technology in Chicago will look at agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Let's see how futures settled on this Monday afternoon. Hard red winter March wheat settled at 590 and a half down 10. May, 595 and a half down 9 and 3 quarters. Soft March wheat settled at 555 and a half down 8 and a quarter. May, 560 down 7 and 3 quarters. March corn settled at 402 up 1 and 3 quarters. May, 410 up 1 and 3 quarters. July, 416 and 3 quarters up 2 and a quarter. December, 426 up 4 and a half. January soybeans settled at 10.13 and a half down 38. March 10.16 down 36 and a quarter. May 10.21 and three quarters down 35 and three quarters. And November 9.99 and three quarters down 25 and three quarters. January soybean meal settled at 356.50 down 7.30. January soybean oil settled at 32.45 down 109. February live cattle, these are last trades, 160.57 and a half down 2.5. January feeders, 223.80 up 137 and a half. February lean hogs, 76.50 down 252 and a half. And those are Monday's settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lunner's weather highlights, he says one more surge of cold will move through the northern and central U.S. plains and Midwest early this week, and then a significant warm-up is expected. Temperatures will be above average in many areas across the U.S. plains and Midwest late this week into the weekend. Snow cover will melt in much of the Midwest. Precipitation in U.S. crop areas will be minimal after today's storm ends in the eastern Midwest and southeastern states. U.S. hard red winter wheat country will be dry until Sunday and Monday of next week, when some light precipitation is expected. Warming temperatures will melt the region's snow cover later this week. Next week's weather will become much more active across the southern and eastern U.S., with a couple of storm systems expected. Their timing and precipitation potential is unclear today because of great divergence in the computer model forecasts. Isolated to scattered showers will occur in portions of Brazil daily this week, but areas from Mato Grosso do Sul and southern Mato Grosso to Bahia and Minas Gerais will continue to struggle for significant rain. Northeast Brazil will be driest, including Bahia, northern and eastern Minas Gerais, and Espírito Santo, where little to no rain is expected. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. We had four major reports released this morning. Here is a recap of the key numbers. We had a 2015 U.S. crop production annual survey report. For corn, production put at 14.216 billion bushels with a yield of 171 BPA. Soybean production was put at 3.969 billion bushels with a yield of 47.8 BPA. Also, this morning, a quarterly grains stocks report as of December 1st, corn 11.203 billion bushels, soybeans 2.524 billion bushels, and wheat 1.524 billion bushels. We also had a winter wheat seedings report released today. All winter acres at 40.5 million. Hard red winter acres at 29.5 million. Soft red winters are 7.5 million. And white is 3.48 million acres. U.S. ending stocks, according to the WASD report, once you crunch the demand side of the equation, look like this. Corn, 1.877 billion bushels. Soybeans, 410 million bushels. And wheat, 687 million bushels. And then on the world WASD production charts, the number that caught everyone's eyes this morning was Brazil soybeans coming in at 95.50 million metric tons. That's an increase of 1.5 million metric tons from the previous estimate. Joining us now on the telephone to crunch all the numbers and tell us what they mean going forward is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
It looks to me, if you just look on the face of it, soybeans were the big loser today.
Well, price-wise, you know, when you look at what the expectations were and what the numbers came in at, it suggests we're not going to run out of beans. We've still got a couple weeks to go in the growing season in the Southern Hemisphere that can make a difference. But with the Southern Hemisphere production going up, when you look at the world carryout at all-time highs of 90.78 million metric tons for beans, it's going to be awful hard to get real bullish beans or see beans go much above the previous highs in through here. You know, we can run into some harvest concerns. We can run into some transportation concerns. We could run into world currency concerns and so forth, but the beans are there. And about the only thing that can really get the market really juiced up here in the near term is some type of logistics situation until we start to get into our growing season.
Technically, although it was a huge move today, beans remained in its sideways trading range that it's been essentially since about October, or maybe a little bit even before October of last year. Do we need to see follow through to really say the trend has gone downward?
Well, whenever you start to figure out the trends down, it goes up. Whenever you start to figure out the trends going higher, it turns back down, and that's created this sideways pattern for the last 3 months almost. We'll see how it acts near those lows here we'd made last week. That's kind of a point to watch. March beans, 10.06. If we start to close down there, we could probably set the stage to move on lower from there. But the key is see if we see some actual follow-through. You know, speculative trades going to lift some shorts and try to pick a bottom there and then see if we get a bounce or not. Producer-wise, I mean, you know, up against the resistance we've seen here this winter is a spot to add to sales or get some hedges on. Producer's point of view, and for those who've cleaned out cash beans, wanting to replace them here, I maybe kind of sit tight here and see how much of a correction we get. But the main theme, like you started the question with, has been sideways here for 3 months, and I really don't see anything different because the trade's been doing quite well, getting people bullish at the top and bearish at the bottom.
If those numbers that USDA came out with today the huge number of metric tons of beans out of South America come to fruition, at what point on a timing does the market begin to go ahead and give up and turn over?
Well, it'd be sometime here in January. I think we're going to trend lower in through February, and then we'll start to look for spring weather here in the U.S., see what happens there. But typically, you start getting past mid-February. If we can't get something going to the upside by then I think we'll be subject to some drifting lower in through here. Fundamentally, man, it's a lot of beans around, and that's kind of why we've put a lot of our hedges in the beans, especially some of these new crop corn hedges. Instead of hedging corn, we've moved to the beans because we feel there's more bang for your dollar in the bean complex.
What do all these fundamentals mean for perhaps starting new crop soybean marketings?
Well, it's when you look at the fundamentals, I mean, the fundamentals pointed to larger supplies from clear back last fall. Looking forward, and it suggests that new crop beans, $10 plus is not bad. Any move to 10 and a half, which we've seen just a tad bit, with opportunities, to get some downside protection, for say. Kind of feels like beans is going to be the heavier one here, especially if this meal and bean oil market failed to catch hold here.
All right, let's turn our attention to corn, which did finish in the green, although not at quite the level it was earlier today.
Oh, boy, what a rodeo. It's robots took charge on the headlines when a bullish headline came out. There was nothing for sale. When a bearish headline came out, there was nothing to be bought. And, it's one of those market classics where sell fade the direction there for the first few minutes at least. But when you look at the big picture in corn in through here, it's kind of like beans, sideways in through here. Corn's held together a little bit better than the beans. Beans suffered selling from the funds of about 14,000 contracts, where on the flip side, you saw corn buying of 8,000-9,000 contracts. Something you've touched on before, a lot of spread activity in the complex for those bearish beans, bullish corn. That's sort of coming into play here after today's close.
Does corn have a bullish story to tell, and can we see maybe March corn make at least one more assault attempt at the high around 417, 418?
Well, I don't know about bullish. I'd say positive, yes. I'd say if we can see some Asian business in DDGs or some concerns worldwide corn, the front lead contract has a target of 425. To go much higher than that, we're going to have to see this dollar get weaker or some type of outside news, such as energies take off back to $100 barrel or something like that, to encourage a move much more than that. We'll see what the outlook meetings show here in February, but new crop corn, it has potential of 4.5 here before we roll over to February.
Where would you begin marketing new crop corn?
All right, started. Been doing it for quite a while. We've established a lot of price floor type of strategies where we put floor unders but leave our upside open. So if corn does rally 450, 475, $5, we can turn around and sell cash corn or hedge some futures up there. That's been the number one play on that. But like I mentioned, we put a lot of hedges in the beans, feeling, bang for your dollars in the bean complex there. Old crop corn, we've hedged a lot of corn. Instead of selling corn last fall, the wide basis, for those who were able to secure some storage, we're short quite a few July futures. Try to capture the carry here, look for basis to firm up.
Why didn't wheat find some footing and finish on the positive side, given the winter seedings report?
Good question, yeah, because basically when you look at those acreage numbers, 2 million acres less all wheat, hard red winter wheat, took the blunt of it, soft red winter wheat down lower half million acres. not a whole lot of wheat here in the east, 7.5 million acres. If the sell-off, you thought we would have had a little bit more of a bullish reaction, but when you look at the world numbers, world-ending stocks wheat is 196 million metric tons, which shows there's no shortage in the world, plus the trade is fearful that this dollar is going to keep marching higher.
What else before we let you go today?
Just a rip-roaring market today. Pretty crazy. If you don't like it, just wait a little while. The big question outside the gray market is how low crude oil is going to go. It's kind of interesting. Some of the people in the know say crude oil will never trade $100 a barrel again. So I think we're looking at some disaster here down the road to turn this thing around.
Thank you much, Kurt.
Take care.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
The plummeting price of gasoline has caused a dramatic change in the relation between the price of corn and the price of gasoline. But as Todd Gleason reports, that new corn-gas relationship does not mean much for how much ethanol will be produced and consumed in the U.S.
Well, the relationship between corn and gasoline is mandated under U.S. law. It simply says the United States must use renewable fuels as part of its energy supply. At most of the time over the past few years, since in fact this relationship was established under law in 2005, the price of ethanol made from corn has been substantially less than the price of a gallon of gasoline. That's not the case today, says University of Illinois ag economist Scott Irwin. However, that price has less influence over how much corn-based ethanol is consumed than one might think.
The price relationship to gasoline has very little to do with how much ethanol we will use. We're going to be stuck at the E10 blend wall going forward, just as we were going back in time.
This is because the Renewable Fuel Standard, that's the name of the law, even at the reduced level proposed by U.S. EPA more than a year ago, was at the E10 blend wall. This isn't quite right, but for simplicity's sake, the law says corn-based ethanol must be blended into the U.S. gasoline supply at a rate no greater than 10% of annual usage or a targeted congressional mandate, whichever is smaller. At this point, the 10% blend rate is the smaller of those two numbers and is called the blend wall.
So you're certainly not going to go below that level. So unless you repeal the RFS entirely, that safety net still stands. On the other side, let's say even if ethanol goes back to being priced much more cheaply than gasoline, we can't use much more because of the blend wall limitations.
So the blend wall is pretty much the usage number. Can't go below it, and though it is possible to go above it by exporting corn ethanol out of the country, it's not particularly profitable.
It stands someplace between 13 and 13.5 billion gallons. There's some possibility that that could edge up slightly with the decline in the price of gasoline, but we have to remember that the demand, short-run demand for gasoline is extremely steeply sloped, which means even with big changes in price, the quantity of gasoline doesn't change a lot.
And if the consumption of ethanol isn't changing, then neither will the number of bushels of corn used to produce ethanol. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at cash grain analysis is Brian Stark of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Brian.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, here are some of the key numbers. U.S. ending stocks for corn, 1.877 billion bushels. For soybeans, 410 million. And wheat comes in at 687 million bushels. And then we have that report that you cash grainers love to keep an eye on, that quarterly grain stock report. Corn, 11.203 billion bushels. Soybeans, 2.524 billion. And wheat, 1.524 billion bushels. The question is, what do these reports mean to your business?
Well, I think the bottom line is, the one thing that jumps out at me is, you're right, we love the quarterly stock numbers, and I think those are key today. I think if you look at the corn stocks number that you mentioned, it implies or suggests first quarter feed use at only 2.2 billion bushels for the first quarter, September through November, versus 2.4 billion last year. Milo's feeding was big, and that offset some of the decline compared to last year in corn. If you look and extrapolate that out to meet the USDA's revised lower annual feed use, we need to use corn feeding or see corn feeding December through August of a little over 3 billion bushels. So we're either suggesting, or the government's suggesting, that annual feed use could be lower in the future reports, or maybe the crop size today was revised too low. A lot of things can be determined, but I think that's a key. When you look at the ending carryout going down, we may still be closer to 2 billion, but all said and done.
This is a little bit of a surprise given the temperatures that we saw in November.
Yeah, it is. It was surprised. And I think some of it could be the fact that if you look at some of the larger states, there were yield reductions from November, which caught, I think, a little bit of us off guard. And maybe it's the fact the crop's a little too low and feed usage is certainly not that low given the winter temps. So time will remain to be seen. But I think one thing you can take from the report is that new crop corn, obviously given the data today, is going to have some support underneath of it and is going to have to defend against losing too many acres, because even at a trend line yield of 165, if you lose, say, 2.5 million acres, you're going to see your carryout drop to into the 1.7 area. So obviously weather is going to become a big issue depending on the acreage intentions here in March.
So the question is, does that happen in futures? Does it happen in cash basis? Or, worst-case scenario for the producer, does it happen with soybean acres falling because of the big crop in South America?
Well, I think it could be a combination, but I think the biggest thing, the futures are going to have to do it. I think you hit that. I think, is it corn going up on the future side, or is it beans coming down? And I think you could have a little bit of both, but irregardless, we saw a little bit of a step today with the big decline in bean prices, and I think, you know, we've said for a while we're fairly bearish November beans, given the prospects of a big South American crop, and we just don't need to intend to plant them. So bean prices in the back end, November 15 and beyond, may tend to lead us lower rather than December 15 necessarily racing higher.
What else do we need to know before we have your prices today?
I think that's the main, a lot of information to digest. The critical thing I continue to tell growers is to make sure we set floors specifically in new crop beans. If you're intending to plant or switch acres, continue to do that, because obviously it's evident that we have plenty of oil seeds and it seems like we want to leave a little upside on the new crop corn.
All right, quickly your prices.
$3.84 cash corn today. New crop 15 corn is $4.01. Cash soybeans $10. New crop out of the field 15 beans $9.69, and new crop July wheat is $5.55.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Thanks, Dave.
Brian Stark of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. It's National Marzipan Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1737, John Hancock was born. Perhaps best known for his bold signature on the Declaration of Independence, he was also sought out during the Revolution as governor of the colony of Massachusetts to raise funds for beef cattle to feed the hungry army, a task which proved difficult to achieve. At one point, Commander-in-Chief of the Army George Washington warned Hancock that if beef was not forthcoming, the Army could not be expected to maintain garrisons below West Point, New York. In 1885, John Bloomfield Jarvis died, a civil engineer. He designed and built the Boston Aqueduct. He also made contributions in construction of canals, railroads, and other water supply systems for the growing U.S. In 1887, Wilhelm Hofmeister died, a German-born botanist. His investigations of plant structure led to the discovery of the regular alternation of sexual and asexual generations in plants. And in 1899, Paul Hermann Müller was born, a Swiss chemist. He discovered that DDT was a potent insecticide. It was the most widely used insecticide for more than 20 years and helped to increase food production around the world, due mainly to its accumulation in animals that eat insects and its toxic effects on them and those further up the food chain, and has been banned in the U.S. since 1972. However, its residue was still found in some foods grown in the U.S. as late as 2002. And that's This Day in Agricultural History. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at agricultural weather is Mark Russo from Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, Dave.
I am getting tired of bundling up super warm, and I would just love for some temperatures to moderate. Will I get my wish?
Your wish is granted there, Dave, although you still need some patience here. Be patient, and by the end of this week, we will have temperatures here across Illinois climbing into the 30s and even some 40s down south, which I think it's kind of sad to say when 30s and 40s is warm. But that is winter here in the Midwest, and we still have to go through another few days here of unseasonably cold temperatures. And in fact, for some areas like in northern Illinois here, we'll be dropping down to close to zero here coming up on the next couple of mornings, or at least into the single digits here. But thereafter, temperatures will begin moderating, and readings will return to warmer than normal levels by the upcoming weekend, and actually look to stay that way here going forward.
Sounds like snow cover is going to melt then.
Yeah, that is true here. And really right now across much of the Midwest, we really don't have any kind of thick snowpack in place anywhere. And so it's not going to take that much once temperatures climb up into the 30s and even 40s here to begin melting that snow.
Does it become more active weather pattern in the second week of the forecast?
We do see some opportunities for precip, and part of that is with these upper-level waves of low pressure that we'll be tracking into the plains and then on into the Midwest. And kind of the item to watch here is during the middle part of next week, indications of a storm system cranking up across the Midwest. Too early to discuss any kind of specifics on precip totals, snow totals. That's going to come down to the exact track, but that is the main item to watch here going forward, especially for next week.
Turn our attention to South America, Mato Grosso do Sul, southern Mato Grosso, Bahia. These areas have been dry. Are they going to stay dry?
Not going to stay dry much longer here. In fact, over the next couple of weeks, we see rainfall gradually returning to those areas, and that is attributed to this ridge of high pressure now over eastern Brazil that's going to be in the process of weakening over the next couple of weeks. In fact, it looks basically gone from Brazil by about 10, 11 days from now, and that's going to open the door to more rainfall opportunities. So as we get towards the final kind of week to 8 days of the month here in January, we do see rainfall picking up significantly across those areas. And so this dry spell that we're seeing in parts of Brazil, overall, it looks short in duration versus anything that long in duration.
Thank you very much, Mark.
You're welcome, Dave.
Mark Russo of Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to subscribe to our free Aggie newsletter. You can do that at willag.org. Use the link in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.